Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
Well, good morning. It is 6:35 on WGN on a Sunday morning filled with snow and rain and sleet, but it's Chicago, and we'll see the sun come out by Thursday, I think. I don't know. A lot to do this morning on the show. As always, we want you to do it with us. 312-981-7200. You can text, you can call, either which way, at that phone number, or text us 312-981-7200. Questions about your pets or about the content we talk about on the show, which will include the largest reptile amphibian show in America. So for all of you with reptile questions, I know you've been waiting. This is your opportunity to ask those questions. You know, I thought that every state in America had laws, including our own state, Illinois. And we have listeners from all over the country that either listen online or, you know, you can listen to the radio with the powerhouse of WGN, I don't know, 16 states or whatever it is. So I shouldn't only assume all the listeners are from the Chicago area. But I thought in Illinois, where WGN is, certainly, but I thought for other states around the country as well, there are laws to protect dogs and other animals from fires and kennels and boarding facilities, and it turns out not to be the case. There are no laws in nearly every state in America. Zero. Nothing. And what precipitated all this was a fire in January that killed 31 dogs in Chicago, but then I learned of a fire on Christmas Eve just outside Baltimore that killed many dogs. A fire, oh, that was in Minnesota. I think the Christmas Eve one. No, that was in Baltimore. And then one just barely a month ago in Minnesota that killed, I think the number is 18 dogs. The point is that this happens and it's got to stop. It's always preventable if we could do one of the following. Either have a fire protection system where there are sprinklers, have a human being there so that person can call the fire department. You'd figure if there's smoke and fire, if a human being is there, that person is calling the fire department, or a alarm system, smoke detectors that ring automatically, as now is the case by law in many places around America, but not for kennels and boarding facilities, that ring automatically to first responders, to the fire department. The smoke alarm goes off, the dogs cannot call, but it rings automatically to the fire department. One of those three. Well, that's what we wrote into law. It's a House bill. It was House Bill 3390. I say was because, yes, it passed the House of Representatives. So naysayers who said, no, it's not going to pass for one reason or another, were wrong. In fact, it passed pretty overwhelmingly by a vote of 95-16 after unanimously being passed by committee. So this bill kind of sailed through. Now on to the Senate, and that's the next step. And the only trick in this is timing, because I guess, and I don't understand at all, Maria Pappas of the House of Representatives who supported the bill from the 45th District, I said Maria Pappas, I meant Diane Pappas, she explained it to me. It has to do with timing, that political timing that I don't completely understand, but it's great news, I think. And I'm getting some texts, 312-981-7200, that say congratulations, but one in particular from a firefighter that says, thank you, Steve, this is very good for pets. This is good for us, too. I am a firefighter in Harwood Heights. So, yes, it is, because the firefighters explained to me, and it's, if you think about it, it's common sense. The sooner they can get to a fire, the less likely, of course, that as many, if any, animals will be killed. And remember, these dogs are in kennels. They have nowhere to run. You know, they're trapped. So the less likely as many will be killed. But moreover, the more likely the fire will be caught earlier, which means the less likely it'll be spread to another building, less likely it will do as much damage. And when fires get very big, that's when firefighters get hurt or worse. So this is good for firefighters as well. It's good for everyone. So call your state senator if you do live in Illinois and tell your state senator that you support the bill. I'm not so sure what the bill number is in the Senate yet. I'm not sure we know that. But in the House, we do know it was Bill 3390. All right. Rich Crowley is, I believe, still the president of the Chicago Herpetological Society. Good morning. Very early in the morning, Rich. Welcome to WGN Radio. How are you? Rich? I'm not hearing you, and I don't quite know why. Let's try it again. Good morning.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on board this morning.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. It sounds like a strange cult. What is the Chicago Herpetological Society?
Wow. It's got trailers in history that go back over 100 years, actually. We've been doing a little bit of history digging around, and the original club been established with the Chicago Academy of Sciences, which has ties back to the Smithsonian Institute. And we've been around for about 52 years now. And, of course, Reptile Fest, which we've been hosting now, has been in it's in its 25th year. And it's a mix of hobbyists, academic professional zookeepers. I mean, it's a really wonderful mix of demographics within the society. So it's not just a club. It goes a little bit more than that for us.
Well, and what it does, I believe, if we were to put it in one sentence, I don't know, you know your mission, but my guess is to help educate people about reptiles, as well, mm-hmm. whether they be professionals or novices, as well as to provide a safe haven for reptiles. Kind of before the term rescue was around, you were indeed rescuing reptiles.
Yeah, that's correct. We have an adoptions program. And just to be specific, it's not just reptiles. We work with amphibians as well. Can't forget them. And we've been, supporting the outreach and the public awareness of what those type of animals actually do for our wildlife, local as well as, beyond the boundaries of Illinois.
Which I want to talk about with you a bit. Tell me about Reptile Fest.
So Reptile Fest is our way of giving back to public to educate people who are interested in reptiles and amphibians. Obviously, with the name Reptile Fest, eye-catching is where I think you will see the vast majority of the species represented. And this is keepers, individuals who actually have maintained the animals successfully and are there to interact and talk with the public and teach them exactly what they would need to know if they want to keep them or if they just want to appreciate them, especially with the native wildlife. If people are curious, is a garter snake dangerous? What is it doing in my backyard? We're there to explain all that.
Mm-hmm. And not only garter snakes, I'm sure you have them there, but what is it, like over 200 species of reptiles and amphibians that you have at the show?
Yeah, we have, on average, at least over 200 species on display. We've cataloged anywhere over, I think, close to 350 different species.
Wow.
Overall. Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
And this
it's
is
probably, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's actually more diversity than you will see in any of the zoos. We have everything out. There's nothing behind the scenes. Everything is there for people to see, and we provide a lot of information about where they're from, what they do, how they behave, how they eat, stuff like that.
And you'll have an opportunity for, and this is a very family-friendly event. I've been there many times over the years, mm-hmm. and I know that for some reptiles, those that don't mind, if you will, being handled, your corn, your individual corn snakes who have been brought up, around people, or bearded dragon lizards, or lots of other examples that kids in particular, but adults too, can actually go ahead and touch the animals, hold the animals, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, what has really made this such an established event every year is the fact that it's not just a matter of looking. You could look on the line, you could look behind a screen, or be behind a glass, but this is actually first contact. You get to actually interact with the animals, feel what they are like. and actually be able to understand what the animals are. There's a lot of myths, and the interaction, the personal position that people are put in when they can make contact to actually hold and see the animals, I think goes a long way with sort of bridging that divide.
Well, all right, I want to talk about that. You mentioned the word myths, and I'm sure there are people listening now who are thinking, ew. And you know what bothers me about that? You know, I worked at the Lincoln Park Zoo years ago, years and years and years ago for a short time. And I saw it in action. I saw where mom and dad would say, ew. And then, you know, little Johnny or little Susie would look at mom and think, oh, and back off at touching, say, a snake. And mom's, ew, overcame the natural curiosity that children tend to have. In some ways, I suppose it's good if you're thinking that there's really danger involved. But in this case, there is no danger involved. It's just preconceptions that moms and dads have about reptiles. So talk about some of the misconceptions.
Well, like you mentioned, I mean, there's that initial reaction, that fear, especially when it comes to snakes. And there's been studies that have demonstrated why people kind of have that reaction. What we've actually introduced is a way to actually face those fears and actually dispel the initial reactions, being to find out that these animals are something not to necessarily be feared, definitely, for any of the animals that are on display. And it's through that interaction with our exhibitors that actually helps open up the communication to actually ask people why they're, you know, squirmish or fearful of it. And we start actually facing each of those myths and debunking them with the actual facts. I mean, for instance, snakes are not slimy. Actually, quite the opposite. They have a very dry feel, very leathery. And I think once people actually physically touch them, they start to realize, you know, from that tactile contact that there's something more to it than what they've originally thought. Snakes don't chase people. I mean, clearly it's an example when you walk around, the snakes are parking on people's shoulders or hands while we're holding them. They don't run away. There's a whole opportunity there to actually talk about what the fear is that you have over an animal, and we can actually provide you facts that help you appreciate them more. Not necessarily go so far as to, you know, get a pet, which a lot of people do bridge eventually. It's amazing to see that transformation from even whether it's young or old. People actually have come back to us years later and said, you know, because you guys actually decided to go out and actually get a pet, and they've been successful with it. And I love those stories, recognizing not everybody does that. So we're there to help sort of give a range of experiences so people have at least a bigger, broader appreciation of what the animals represent.
312-981-7200. You could text us or call us at that number. And the text is, I have a 11-year-old son. He is thinking about a snake. He loves snakes. What would be the kind of snake I should get, and where should I get that snake from? That is a million-dollar question there, because I think it's that's exactly right. I mean, those questions, because, you know, a dog is a dog is a dog, whether it be a St. Bernard or a Chihuahua, it's the same species. It's not right. Not true at all with snakes. So what would be the right one to get? And same thing, where do you get it from? Do you go to a pet store, or are there better choices?
Yeah, so the great questions. We face those every day when we go through the show. We tailor the discussion a little bit to the family experience. How involved the parents going to be in this? You know, what's the responsibility level of the youth who actually wants that pet? What type of homework are they willing to do? Entry level snakes. There's a bunch of them out there that exist. There's great information out there. Everything from a ball python to a corn snake to a milk snake to a king snake. You know, those are some of the ones off the top that I could think of, but they still require an investment in time and understanding what you need to do to set up a cage. As you mentioned, dogs are pretty ubiquitous as far as the different types that are out there, but the care is there. You take it to a vet, you feed it daily, you give it water, but you don't have to worry about nurturing the animal's environment and actually making sure that the humidity and temperature are proper. So that's where the discussion really leads to. Keeping the snake is easy once you've got the right environment. And it does take a little bit of education and a little bit of effort. But once you've done that, the rest of it actually falls in place pretty easily.
And where do you get the snake from?
So the sources of the snakes, we are very fortunate at this age now where pretty much everything is captive bred. So there are trade shows that go on open to the public. There's one that happens in March and October of every year called the North American Breeders Conference. We have breeders that are affiliated with the Academy, Chicago Herp Society as members. And there are websites out there that sell the animals, and there are breeders that provide great information. And a key on this one is know what you're looking for first, and then do the homework to figure out who's the appropriate person to procure that from. And by all means, I mean, the Chicago Herpological Society is there to help guide people in the right directions.
And I think that's important because some of the websites are, not so good. And they look good. The websites look good, but they're not really, they're awful sources to get animals from, snakes or anything else. So asking someone like you, getting involved, finding resources that can answer those questions is really important. And one way to find out those resources or to rescue an animal from you guys directly, Chicago Herpetological Society, is simply to go to Reptile Fest. Where is it? And how can people get there?
Oh, great. It's at Northeastern Illinois University. It's in the PE building that they have there. We're actually in two gymnasiums. We've got 45,000 square feet. It's an overdose of reptiles and amphibians. parking is free. There's
free
parking right alongside. Yep. Hey, in Chicago, I mean, come on. Free parking is rare.
Yes, it certainly is.
Tickets can be purchased on right at reptilefest.com. You have all the information right out there for people. We start up at 10 o'clock this morning. We go on till 4 o'clock today, and it's going to be a wonderful day. Nobody wants to be out in this weather, and you could be in a nice warm area with a lot of good scaly company to keep you busy.
All right, Rich Crowley, Chicago Herpetological Society. I have more information about all this on my website as well, and that's stevedale.tv with a link to tickets. Tickets are how much?
Tickets are $11, but we have also group rates for people and all the details of that. And, of course, the special needs, they come in for free. We love them. They're our best crowd, so we love to see them come out.
And children as well. If they're under 7 or something like that, it's free as well, somewhere in there.
That is, yep.
All right.
All the ticket sale information is right on there. And if anybody has any questions, we've got people there available for calls and email and text.
Very good. Rich Crowley, Chicago Herp Society, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Well, last week on the show, we had Dr. Natalie Marks sitting right here in the studio, and we talked about how people aren't vaccinating for too many things, including leptospirosis. And if you live in the Chicago area, it's everywhere. But if you live outside the Chicago area, it's everywhere because wildlife carries leptospirosis, a bacterial infection that loves water, lives in water. I look outside, I see the rain, snow, rain, whatever's going on out there. Even puddles. So a rat piddles in a puddle. That's right, a rat, a city rat. These rats, big time, maybe more than any other animal, carry leptospirosis. But if you live out in the countryside, there's raccoons, there's squirrels, it's carried by coyotes and you name it. They carry leptospirosis. Now, a lot of animals never get sick. A lot of animals only sometimes get sick. It doesn't matter. It can make our dogs very sick. And our dogs drink a little bit, or on their paws even, just they just step in the puddle. How do you avoid that? You know, after rain, even if they're not dogs that go in the lake and swim or go to a pond or a river, a retention pond even, and dive in, they still walk in these puddles, right? Even in the big city. So what do you do to protect your dog? Well, you vaccinate. But there's this movement against vaccination. Well, the World Health Organization says vaccine hesitancy, they just said it this week, vaccine hesitancy is a worldwide threat. And they define that as being the ability to vaccinate, but the unwillingness to vaccinate when a vaccine is available, readily available, and recommended for very good reason. Now, they're talking about human beings here, but this has crossed over into animal health. Same is true for dog flu. We know in the Chicago area, dog flu is now endemic. It lives here. That's what that word means. So the only way to protect your dog is to vaccinate your dog. And too many people, and you know what? I don't want to over-vaccinate our pets either. I truly don't. So talk to your veterinarian about what's right and what makes sense for your pets. But also listen to the show we did. It's on my blog, the podcast, at stevedale.tv. The show we, meaning Dr. Marks and myself, did last week when we talked about this issue. And we talked specifically about leptospirosis. You know, a Chicago shelter called One Tail at a Time wanted to open another facility, and Alderman Maldonado said no. Roberto Maldonado, the 26th ward, said, I'm going to use what power I have to prevent you from doing this. And there was no kind of rhyme or reason for it. I've tried to reach out to the alderman more than once, but I have not forgotten about this issue. I mean, I've even called him on a cell phone, and he's not returned my call. So, point is, I've not forgotten about it. The Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive patient-centered healthcare experience at their dental institute, family medicine clinic, speech language institute, physical therapy institute, and eye institute. At their clinics, you receive exceptional care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500, 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for healthcare. Just rolling by 7 o'clock right now. You can hear everyone's favorite weatherman, Tom Skilling, weekday afternoons at 4 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes at 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker user, just say, play WGN on TuneIn. At 7 o'clock, this WGN News is sponsored by NextDoorAndWindow.com. Here's Mr. Dave Schwani with the news.